Well, good morning. It's so nice to be here back at Dawson. I think I came a few times when I was at Sanford, so it's grown quite a bit. I'm not going to tell you when I graduated, as most women don't like to show their age, so FYI. And we are going to talk about sleep disorders. And I was told ahead of time that some people may have some sleep issues in the room, so we will try to address any questions. And I do try to keep it short, the presentation. So we'll have plenty of time to talk and give good information. So this is the basics and maybe, you know, a little more in depth on what we're doing. So we're just going to talk about sleep first. There are different types of sleep issues. So that's why I did sleep disorders, not just sleep apnea. We are going to try to cover a few different options here. But the big ones are sleep apnea, which most people, I think, get very nervous when they hear their doctor say that word. But there is sleep apnea, and then there is insomnia. People that can't go to sleep, they have trouble staying asleep or falling asleep. And some other options, like people with restless legs, maybe they sleepwalk, maybe they sleep talk. So those are all in different ranges. Not all of those mean you have to have a CPAP machine. There are differences. So we're going to kind of break those down today and talk about those different things and what to look for, what to talk to your doctor about, and things that maybe you should watch in your spouse or yourself that you're concerned about. Like I said here, frequent napping is not normal. Some people think that's okay. Unless you're one of my toddlers or a toddler, it's really not expected. So, and Matthew, I apologize, I'm going to walk around. So obstructive sleep apnea is the big one that a lot of doctors worry about. Why? Because of the health issues it can cause. And it's very common in middle age and older people. Now, we do see children with it, but it's not as common. We've actually noticed in the United States that it's become worse. Some of that is due to the American diet, weight, inactivity. And we'll kind of talk about the different types of sleep apnea. There are different types, what causes it. So the prevalence, again, like I said right here, is about 10 to 20%. I don't know that that's actually a true number, because I think some people get very scared when a doctor says, well, how do you sleep? Do you sleep at night? No, I don't snore. I'm fine. Please, please, please don't put that thing on my face. So I do think that our numbers are off, but I think the important thing we need to try to get out into the community is the health risks that occur. So first we're going to talk about risk factors, then we're going to talk about if you have sleep apnea, what does that cause later down the road. So risk factors are, one, being overweight, and I like pictures, so I think that's easier. Two, as you can see in the middle, that lovely picture of the opening of the mouth, you have kind of crowding in your throat. So when you breathe, when you lay down, your tonsils or your adenoids or your uvula will kind of block the flow of oxygen, causing a different type of sleep apnea. If you have kind of a recessed jaw, that does almost the same thing as a crowded throat, meaning when you lay back, things get a little floppy, and so they impede the flow of oxygen when you lay down. Men are more at risk than women, and large consumption of alcohol can be an issue as well. So, it is usually, like I said on this last one, a collapsing of the airway. That's one form of it. And that means that people will snore, or they'll go, maybe someone's heard their spouse do that at night. So there are different types. Not everyone snores. Not everyone is overweight. That's another thing that I think some people don't know. And even some people are asymptomatic, which means they'll say, but I go to sleep at night, and then I wake up in the morning. I don't have sleep apnea. I don't stop breathing and wake up. I'm fine. There's nothing wrong. So again, just to show the point of what's normal and what's not normal, let me get out of the way for you guys so you can see really quick. So this is not normal because your airway is blocked right here. So you don't have as much flow as over here, where you can see both from the nose and the throat, you're getting a good flow of oxygen on that normal person, whereas it's limited in this one, and it's not completely blocked. So it tends to occur maybe if people are, again, like we said, more overweight, they drink a large amount of alcohol, that can cause sometimes worsening to where people recognize it. You know, if people lose weight, it goes away. So again, it's an unusual issue if it's not consistent. If you have sleep apnea, what's your risk? Your biggest risk is heart issues because you are overworking your heart. So why is that? Because when you fall asleep, your body says, okay, when I go to sleep, a normal person, that's my body's time to rest, reboot, and just redo for the next day, to get ready for the next day. If you're not doing that, if you have sleep apnea, what's happening is your body's asleep, but your brain is not. Your brain is basically telling your body, breathe, 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 breathe. That is not normal. You should be able to fall asleep. Your brain should kind of be able to go on, you know, standby, just monitor the normal issues, and it take a break as well. So by your body overworking at night, it's going to make you tired in the morning. You're going to have weight gain. But the other thing is when you have limited oxygen, your heart has to work harder to push more blood through your body to give your body more oxygen. So you're overworking your heart at night. You want to scare a cardiologist, tell them you have sleep apnea and that you have heart condition, because it's going to worsen your heart condition. They want a sleep study. They may even drive you to a sleep study if they're that worried about you. So it's a big issue. Again, adverse outcomes, as I said. Now, I usually get the women's attention with the weight gain. Sometimes men will actually admit that they're worried about weight gain as well. But weight gain is a major contributor, because then you're on a slippery slope, right? Weight gain can cause diabetes, high cholesterol, worsening heart conditions, heart attacks. It can worsen arthritis, because your body's not resting at night. So again, you're going to hurt more, you're going to be more tired, you may not feel like doing the activities you used to do. Memory impairment, I think my older patients, and by what I mean by older is over 20, my older patients tend to perk on that too, because I'll have 30, 40 year olds come in and say, I forget things really easily. I'll go into a room and I will forget what I was going to do. Now, as a mother of two toddlers, I blame my children on my memory issues. Hopefully I don't have sleep apnea. I haven't had a sleep study, so I don't know. But I joke with my patients, I haven't slept well for 3 years because my boys did not sleep well as babies. So I do remember those days when I would come to work and I would have to write down everything as I left a patient room, because I would talk to someone about something and say, okay, I'm going to call this doctor for you. And I have to make myself notes. Thank goodness they're getting a little older, they're sleeping a little better, my memory's improved a little. So some people say, I have Alzheimer's. I know I have Alzheimer's. You do a memory test on them and it's not Alzheimer's. So then we talk about sleep. And again, as a lady who didn't sleep for 3 years, I really have an interest in making sure people are sleeping. That's one of my first questions to a new patient. Well, how do you sleep? Well, when I ask that question, they say, well, I sleep on my right side with my arm above me. It's like, no. I'm sorry. Do you feel rested when you wake up in the morning? And that's how I try to remember to phrase it, is when you wake up, once you've kind of gotten your shower and gotten up, do you feel okay? Do you feel ready for the day to take on the challenges of the day? And that's how sometimes we'll find people have a sleep disorder. How do you find sleep apnea? Well, this is everyone's part where they make faces at me, because a sleep study is what you need. Now, let me rephrase just for a second. A sleep study is not just to see if you have sleep apnea. It also tests for other types of sleep disorders. So it's kind of killing two birds with one stone. Not only are you going to rule out sleep apnea, but we're going to see, do you talk at night? Do you have restless leg? Do you have narcolepsy? You know, certain things that we can discover with just that one test. Yes, it is overnight. You don't get to sleep in your bed. They let you bring your pillow. And you have wires. I think I've got a picture. So they have sleep centers. And they have a nice bed, but yes, they hook you up to all this fun stuff. And a tech gets to read this at night. So this is everything they look at. So they look at your breathing, your heart rate, your oxygen level, if you've stopped breathing, how many times you move your limbs at night. Very, very detailed information. When we send a patient for a sleep study, there is a lung doctor there, a pulmonologist, and they review all of these studies. They put it in a nice little packet and they deliver it to our office. And we look through it and they make a recommendation of this person had so many events, whether that's limb movement, not breathing, low oxygen, things of those, you know, issues. And they kind of make a determination of, well, if you do this so many times, you need a CPAP machine, or it seemed like it was more a floppy uvula or, you know, a crowded airway, you need to go see an ENT. So they can help us make those determinations of, no, they didn't stop breathing, but they had a whole bunch of limb movement and they never went into non-REM sleep. So who can order the sleep test? Primary care can. So talk to your primary care doctor. It's easily set up. The one thing I will tell people is, and I try to remember this, is that you do have a copay, typically. So asking your insurance, what is my copay? Because your doctor won't know that. We feel like we know a lot. We don't know everything. Asking your insurance company before you go is very important to see if that's going to be a high deductible or what's going on. You can go see a lung doctor before you get a sleep study if that's a preference, and that's not a problem. But that's, again, another doctor's visit, another copay. You know, they're going to want to see you regularly as well. Sometimes it's easier to let the doctor that knows you, your primary care doctor, kind of talk to you about sleep, or you bring the issue up. Let them do the study, and then if they feel that you need to go to a pulmonologist, then they can do it. Because guess what the pulmonologist is going to do when they see you? They're going to send you for a sleep study. What's a CPAP look like? There are a lot of different ones. I wish I could have gotten, I think I did, and I have a picture of appliances as well. So let me start with this. Some people, as we talked about, have an airway issue where maybe their, you know, their jaw is recessed, it's a little shorter, so it blocks the airway. You can do appliances. So a dentist or an orthodontist can make a dental appliance for you that'll kind of push your jaw forward and open your airway, and you sleep at night. You may feel like you're 12 again with your braces, but at least you can breathe and you can rest well and you feel better in the mornings. Sometimes that has to be adjusted. So seeing an orthodontist or your dental physician, you know, once a year is a good idea to make sure it doesn't need to be adjusted. If you have sleep apnea that a CPAP machine would be good for, there are lots of different ones. This is the traditional one where you kind of have the piece over your nose. Some people have to have a full mask where it kind of forces air into their nose and their mouth. There's some that look like just, if you've seen people with oxygen where they have just the nasal cannula, they have what's called a nose pillow. I think I'm saying that correctly. So you have different options. And when you go to be fitted for a CPAP, they let you try all of them out and see which one works, which one, you know, helps you sleep, which one shows that your apnea is improved. You may have to go through a second nap to see if the machine is working for you. It's like, you know, before you buy, you gotta test it out, right? So let's see if we're gonna go to, okay. So I put this in here because, again, you say a CPAP, and everyone gives me a bad look. I've never had one person go, yay, I get a machine that makes noises at night. I'm so excited. Now, once they get it and they rest well, you can't wrestle it out of their hands. So, there, you know, there are people that are happy once they get it. Sometimes that takes some arm wrestling, but you get there. But again, it depends on what kind of sleep apnea you have. Is it your weight? So, I mean, weight loss surgery, you know, that's an option. Surgery to take out your tonsils and your uvula and your adenoids, open up your airway. So that helps you breathe better and you don't need the machine. The exercises, you know, I did try to find a link for that, and I've got one at the end of the PowerPoint where it's a link. If you go onto the website for Dawson, you'll be able to click on the link at the end for strengthening exercises. So if you have like a floppy palate, they have exercises you can do to strengthen that. Nasal strips, you know, I don't know that we've really seen people that it's been beneficial. There are people with allergies, and really nose sprays and taking an allergy tablet are much more beneficial than the nose strips. Now, there may be some people out there, a few, that works for, but I have not seen those patients. Atrial overdrive pacing, so that is a part of your heart that sends an electronic signal through the heart pathway. I'll be honest, I don't know, unless you go see someone after your sleep study, how beneficial that would be to bring up until you've had the sleep study. But they may see that you're actually having palpitations at night or heart racing, and that's what causes it. And then going to see a cardiologist about that would be helpful. Acupuncture, again, there's not enough evidence, but some people have found benefit. Helps them rest well, it helps them relax. Let me see, drug therapies. So again, the ventilator, and those are more for the other sleep disorders, which we're gonna get to. So insomnia, I feel like I talk to someone about this at least 4 times a day. And it's usually women. Maybe because women are more chatty, I don't know. But some people have difficulty falling asleep, and some people have difficulty staying asleep. Or some people have to get up in the middle of the night because of children. Bladder, you know, I had one lady, she said, well, I drink until I go to bed, and then I have to go and pee like 5 times a night. Well, it's because you're drinking right before you go to bed. Your bladder can't last that long. But it is many issues that kind of surround what we call insomnia. So the difficulty falling asleep, I will say, you know, most people say, well, when I lay down, I can't shut my brain off. I have this and this and this and this and this that I have to do, or I've been doing things before. And we're going to talk about some different options for falling asleep. Falling asleep sometimes is a little easier for us to fix because we have a lot of options for that. Staying asleep is sometimes harder because sometimes we don't know why you're waking up. The bladder, you know, I might be able to help that. The kids, I really can't do much about that. I'm sorry. I'm still trying to figure mine out. So sleep aids. What are sleep aids? Please, please, please do not take Benadryl or Z-Quil. Please, I beg of you. Do not do that. Why is that? And I know I'm at Dawson, so please forgive me. But I had an attending that said taking a Benadryl is like drinking a fifth of Jack. Because then you just fall asleep, but you don't get the good sleep that you need, that your body is used to. It is just, you're just drugging yourself. There are other medicines that can help. Now, I will say though, cognitive behavioral therapy, this one I have up here, has really been shown to be the most effective. But that takes a lot of practice and a lot of work. So what does that mean? It means your bed is only for two things, sleep and marital relations. This is the nicest way I can say it. It does not mean you watch TV in bed. It does not mean you're on your phone texting. It does not mean you're on your Kindle reading a book before bed. So all that can be done like in a chair in your bedroom, but when you go to sleep, it should be to sleep. Lights off, low light. If you need a little bit of a noise machine, that's fine. I've had some patients that will use a light to wake them up in the morning because going to sleep at the same time every night and waking up at the same time every night shows your body what is normal, what it needs, so that you get on a cycle, which is more natural. Remind your body what is natural. There are medicines. So I will say, I've had patients come in and they hand me, this is everything I've done. I've been to a counselor. I have done everything you asked me, and I still cannot fall asleep, and I'm losing my mind. I have to work. I have a family. Please, this is really getting bad. Their body's in a bad cycle. And so I at least try, because I'm not a fan of medicine if you don't need it, which may sound unusual for a doctor, to give it to you short term. Meaning, okay, you have trouble falling asleep. We'll try this or this. And that's really a decision that needs to be made between you and your doctor, and them giving you options and talking about, well, this medicine does this. There are potential for abuse of some of the medicines. Now, if you have trouble falling asleep, that number's a lot less of what medicines to take. So what are those to stay asleep? Well, one is Ambien. If you've ever heard of that, the biggest side effect is sleepwalking or sleep eating or sleep driving. Very scary. Some people it works beautifully. You just warn whoever's at home, okay, the first night they take it, be aware of noises. Make sure if you hear somebody up and getting around, I need to know. You need to call the doctor the next day because we need to change it. Ambien is generic, so it's cheaper. It is something that we use once in a while. Lunesta, it's a branded medicine. It's similar to Ambien, and what it's supposed to do is help you fall into that deep sleep. I really prefer to start out low, and that's melatonin, something your body makes naturally. And when your body is off of its normal sleep schedule, by adding that melatonin, which is actually an herbal, you're reminding your body of, okay, this is the normal level that I'm at, and it helps you fall asleep and stay asleep. It does not work for everyone, but it is mild. The side effects are not, I think I've heard people, some people have weird dreams. That's the one thing I've heard on it. We can give it to children, so sometimes to reset a kid's sleep cycle. I have some nurses that work at Brookwood, and maybe they'll do what's called the Baylor shift, which means they do a night time on the weekend, so their sleep's all off whack. By doing the melatonin, they're able to get some rest. So lots of options. The moving, I was just kind of joking, if you got kids, just move them into a different room. We still have patients where the kids come in the middle of the night, and if they are anything like mine, my four-year-old will elbow you, he'll kick you, you'll have a foot in your face, so parents don't get much sleep. So moving them back to their bed, very, very important. A sleep diary, why would you do that? If you're getting up and going to the bathroom, you can kind of correlate, okay, I had a glass of water at 9, I got up and peed at midnight. We know that we need to move that last glass of water back to maybe 7. And you can have a sip, but you can't have a whole cup of water before you go to bed. Restless leg syndrome. This one's actually quite interesting, and I think we're learning more about it now. But sometimes restless leg can be a neural issue, meaning your brain is sending signals for your limbs to tighten or to jerk. Sometimes it's actually iron deficiency. And some patients don't know that. So they'll say, well, I'm getting these weird twitches. It's a lot worse at night. We check their blood level, and they have iron deficiency anemia. We fix that iron deficiency, and they don't have to take a medicine. They sleep well, they don't have any problems, and it's okay. Medications. If any of you take medicines and you read that nice little fold-out sheet that's like a map of the United States, insomnia is one of them. Nobody's body has read the book on how it's supposed to take the medicine. Everyone can have a side effect, and lack of sleep is one of those. So your doctor going over your medicine list with you and saying, well, when did you start that medicine? That seems to have started about a week after you started this. Maybe we need to change that. And that takes some detective work on our end. But the more information you give us, the better we can kind of help ferret that out. Kidney disease. Again, that's more of bladder issues, drinking too late at night. Maybe you don't have a strong muscle, so when you go, you're having to get up and rush to the bathroom, and now you're awake. Well, you can't go back to sleep. So that's hard. So kind of making sure you're getting your yearly physical, checking on all that. Your doctor asking you, well, do you feel like you have to run to the bathroom, or do you feel like you're always thirsty? Then kind of talking about different things of that nature. Peripheral neuropathy. So if anyone's diabetic, they've probably heard of this phrase. So peripheral neuropathy means your nerve endings are irritated. Some people experience burning, tingling, numbness. Some people say it feels like ants crawling on their feet. And it's more so at night, because they say, well, when I'm active, I'm fine. I don't feel it when I'm up working or outside, but right when I sit down or lay down, it is all consuming. That's all I can think about, and I have to get up and walk, and it hurts so bad. Well, that can be from a vitamin deficiency. It can be because you're diabetic. So talking about that as well, about, well, what keeps you up? Again, this detective work that we have to do really helps discern what kind of issue we need to look up. And you might not have to have a sleep study, so that's even better. Other types of restless leg are periodic limb movement, which you don't really know unless your spouse says, well, you hit me in the middle of the night. I got an elbow to the face or a hand to the face, or you kicked me, like what my four-year-old does. Or alcohol. Alcohol can, again, like that Benadryl, can make you go into a very deep sleep, but it's not a restorative sleep. Can you prevent sleep disorders? Some of them. So if you gain weight, you're at a higher risk of a type of sleep apnea, as we've gone over, right? You're at risk for diabetes, which can cause that peripheral neuropathy, which might keep you up. Staying active, because you're helping your heart work, you're helping your blood vessels work, you're keeping your brain and everything going just as it should. Seeing your primary care doctor, you know I have to plug that before I leave, is a very good thing. And if they're nosy like I am, they're gonna ask you about your sleep and say, you know, do you feel rested when you wake up? Not how do you sleep? Obviously, I'm not using good wording, so I have to work on that. But just them going over everything, doing your yearly blood work, because you may have a mild anemia that could cause that restless leg. So that's important to look at. And I know men don't like this, but your wife is typically going to tell you, you were snoring last night. It was awful. What is wrong? Were you really tired? Or, you know, you sound sick. I know we don't sound maybe particularly happy about that, maybe because we didn't get to sleep, but they're worried about you. You need to worry when they don't say anything. That's the problem, because then they've got more insurance on you, or they're just going to let you fall apart, something. So when they talk to you, it's a good thing. I do have spouses, and it's usually quite entertaining, come in together. So for their yearly, which is usually very entertaining, because I'll have some spouses that'll say, well, it's my turn to talk to her. You've done enough talking. It's my turn. But they're usually pretty good about letting you know about the other one that may be, you know, the man will say, well, she's not eating as much as she used to. And when she walks up the stairs, I can kind of tell that she's, you know, she looks like she hurts a little bit. Or the wife will say, well, he snores, or he seems more tired. He takes more naps on the weekends, or after we go to lunch after church, he goes home and goes to sleep. And it might be things that you think of yourself as, oh, I'm just tired this week. Oh, it's okay, it's a cold. It's been cold outside, that's why I'm napping. But usually your spouse, they really are paying attention to you, and they love you and they care about you. And so it's not always, you know, something you want to hear, but sometimes it's very helpful to us. So just be aware. So try to sleep. I usually put a picture of my kids in. This is my two-year-old, and he's actually a better sleeper than the four-year-old, which I should have put a picture. So please don't tell my four-year-old, Toby, that I didn't put a picture of him on here. This one's actually a good sleeper, but we were telling him, please try to go to sleep. And so he's closing his eyes and trying really hard to go to sleep. These are the resources. So when you go online and look up the PowerPoint, you'll be able to click on these. And it'll take you right to some of the resources I've used. So one is the sleep disorder website. One is a government-funded research that kind of gives you tips and pointers and things to look at. And that's it.